Nationwide, we bring you latest current issues, discussions and information. Nationwide on Radio Miraya.
Hello and welcome to Nationwide Discussion Hour on Radio Miraya with me, Gabriel Shadar. And we will be discussing some of the efforts of the United Nations agencies and organizations as we mark the 80th anniversary of the organization. And as we celebrate the organization's efforts worldwide, we focus today on developments in South Sudan and how some of the organizations have been exerting their efforts here. And I will be discussing in the studio with my guests from three United Nations organizations. That is the UN Women, UNFPA, and UNOPS, about their roles in women, youth, and community empowerment. This is all in the context of sustainable development. And I have with me in the studio my guest, Sarah Nyabakshat, Communications Officer from UN Women. Welcome once again.
Thank you, Gabriel.
And I welcome also Dr. Jaguru Roberts, Program Specialist, Youth and HIV, UNFPA. Welcome.
Thank you for having us.
And I welcome Aida Khamis Woja, the Communication Officer with UNOPS. Welcome.
Thank you, Gabriel.
Welcome back to the studio again.
Thank you so much.
Yes. As I said, I introduced that the United Nations is making 80 years this October 24th, and that is tomorrow. We'll be marking that. I think there will be an event at the University of Juba. And so I have here three United Nations organizations and agencies, if I can say. And as we are always having new listeners who are listening to these kind of programs, let each one of you give us what is your organization and why do you exist? Let me start with UN Women, with Sarah Nyabak.
Thank you so much, Gabriel, and hello viewers once again. My name is Sarah Nyabak with UN Women as a communications officer. So UN Women is the United Nations entity for gender equality and empowerment of women. And it is dedicated specifically to promoting gender equality and women's rights. Thank you.
And this is what you have been trying to do here in South Sudan.
Yes.
Yes, let me go to Dr. Jurungu Roberts from UNFPA.
Thank you, Gabriel, for having us. UNFPA simply means United Nations Population Fund, and our work in South Sudan focuses, and globally actually, on sexual reproductive health, gender equality, particularly for women and youth, strengthening health systems to provide maternal care, family planning, prevention and responding to gender-based violence, as well as promoting comprehensive sexuality education, youth empowerment, and data collection for development in the country. So actually, UNFPA, together with the government of South Sudan, has three results that they work towards achieving before 2030. One is zero unmet need for family planning. Second is zero gender-based violence and other harmful practices, and particularly for South Sudan, is early child marriage. And then the third one is the unmet needs zero unmet needs for family planning, and zero preventable maternal deaths. But there's a fourth one that is so important for us to realize these three transformative results, and that is zero new HIV transmissions by 2030. So basically, UNFPA aspires for a world where every childbirth is safe, every pregnancy is wanted, and every young person's potential is achieved at the end. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that. Aida Khamis, Communication Officer for UNOPS. Yes. What is UNOPS?
Thank you so much, Gabriel. UNOPS stands for the United Nations Office for Project Services. We have been here in Southern Sudan by then, that is 2005, and South Sudan 2011 till date. UNOPS is a project-based UN agency that has been in South Sudan since 2005, as I said. It provides practical solutions to key service lines, which are not only limited to this, but beyond. Our key focus is on infrastructure. We also do procurement in our project-based. We have financial management. We have project management and human resource management. So as I said earlier, it's a project-based UN agency that works on demand-driven basis. So whatever project that cuts across, whether in the public entity, private entity, the UN agencies, any other project that comes, that is where UNOPS falls, and that is where UNOPS will act and have practical solutions to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you very much, Aida, for that. And for the listeners who would like later to interact with the guests in the studio, the SMS line is 09121-77141. The SMS line again is 09121-77141. And later, the numbers, I will be announcing the numbers. We have also regular callers, but this is for the time being. If you have a question, you can ask any of the agencies here in the studio on that SMS line, both in English and in Arabic. Let me go back to my key questions. And Sarah from UN Women, and you have explained that you are here for women and gender issues. So what is the background on the status of women and youth in South Sudan as we speak?
Thank you so much, Gabriel. I just want to say that UN Women is pleased to join today's conversation amidst pivotal global milestones, especially now in 2025, whereby we are commemorating the 30th anniversary of the Beijing Plus 30 Declaration. And we are also having the 25th anniversary of the UN Security Council resolution, which is 1325. And there is going to be a commemoration conference on the 29th of this month on women, peace and security. The UN is also undergoing critical reforms right now, shaped by key lessons and shifting global landscape. But what I want to say is that South Sudan and UN Women, they share a bond. It's a very unique bond because we are nearly the same age. And UN Women marks 15 years anniversary. And this moment offers valuable opportunity to reflect on progress and challenges in advancing gender equality, both globally and in South Sudan. So being the youngest nation, Gabriel, in the world, South Sudan remains one of the most fragile states right now. And globally as well, as we speak right now, with ongoing conflict, displacement, and humanitarian crisis that are affecting women and youth. And women and girls face these systemic challenges on gender inequality, including limited access to meaningful participation, education, healthcare, and economic opportunities. Gabriel, right now in South Sudan, about only 16% of women are literate compared to 40% of men. And around 65% of women have experienced physical or sexual violence. Much of it is normalized by women. A lot of women normalize violence and they keep quiet about it. And about 45% of girls are married before the age of 18. Which is really, really very bad, limiting education and economic opportunities for such girls who experience such kind of early marriage. And then more than 4 million South Sudanese remain displaced, the majority being women and girls, children and youth. You can't even talk about the flood that is ongoing right now. So these are really devastating situations in South Sudan. But I want to say, Gabriel, despite all these challenges and hardships, women are leading us at the national levels and community levels. They are mediating peace, organizing trauma healings, dialogues, and building local peace through women's group, as well as faith-based. So despite ongoing challenges, there are strong opportunities to sustain partnership with diverse stakeholders, building on past and current efforts, advance gender equality and women's empowerment. So if you see all this background, this is what South Sudan is going through. But then there's the good news. Like I said, there's a bond between South Sudan and UN Women. Like we are at the same age. So UN Women has come in and give some interventions that are trying to help the women and the youth. And through our African Development Bank project, we were able to enhance access to finance for women and youth. Like last year, about 300 women and youth MSEs, they receive interest-free loans, allowing women and youth to start and to grow their businesses. So this is something that we were able to do as UN Women. Currently, also under our World Bank project, we are working to provide grants and productive assets to about 218 women on businesses. And we are giving about, let's say, 2,000 to 4,000 to help boost their businesses.
We will come more and more to these efforts.
Yeah.
And let me say to the listeners who are Arabic speaking, Sharabit قلنا إنه يعني المنظمة اللي اسمها UN Women ده عمره 15 سنة الآن وفي اتفاقيات كثيرة زي اتفاقيات بيجينغ واتفاقية رقم 1335 ده كله خاص باتفاقيات حول المرأة. بتقول إنه الوضع بتاع المرأة في جنوب السودان يعني وضع ما سهل, إنه يعني 16% بس من النسوان هم متعلمين وأكثر من 45% من الرجال هم متعلمين في جنوب السودان. أكثر من 55% من النسوان في جنوب السودان بيتعرضوا لعنف العنف المنزلي وبعدات بيسكتوا عليهم, و 45% من البنات قاعدين يزوجوهم قبل عمر 18 سنة, وكثير من الزواجات دي يعني زواجات بالإجباري. وكمان بتقول إنه رغم ده يعني المرأة في جنوب السودان بتوري إنها قادرة تعمل حاجات, يعني رغم إنه في 4 مليون من الناس نازحين في جنوب السودان لكن برضو النسوان قادرين يعملوا تغيير في الليدرشيب حقهم في منظماتهم المختلفة, في التروما هيلينج الشفاء من الصدمات, حتى في كنائس في الفيس بيس جروبس, وكمان في منظمات يعني بنوك بنك التنمية الإفريقي والبنك الدولي قاعدين يعملوا مشروعات. وذكرت إنه زي 300 امرأة حصلوا على مشروعات صغيرة ومتوسطة بمختلف المساعدات, والجهود لسه ماشية. We'll get back to you later. Let me move now to my second guest, Aida, about the initiatives that the UN has launched to empower women and youth.
Thank you so much, Gabriel. Thank you so much, Gabriel. As the UN, I'm talking as the UN as a family, the UN has put in place key components that have to initiate, that have been initiated to empower youth and women. And some of these components are the ones that align UN agencies to see how they can drive their mandates, to drive their projects to achieve them. One of these components in this initiative for the UN is that all women, regardless of where they are, they must be empowered to have a sense of self-worth. Regardless where they are, they should know that they are very important in society, they contribute to society development, and they should be empowered in all skills that they can. Youths and women should have the right to have a choice to make, determine the kind of life they want to lead. They should not be left in a sense where the direction is lost. Wherever agency that is working with the different mandates must have that initiative in mind, aligning that to their projects. There is also this component as a UN family that the women and the youths should have a right to access opportunities and resources. This also again goes back to the alignment of the different mandates of the UN agencies. They should also have a right to have power to control their own lives within their homes, outside their homes, and how they would like to lead it in terms of a positive development, and that is driven to the sustainable development goals. And as such, I would like to say that for UNOPS, I did say that we work as we are project-based UN agency. We have different projects that we deal with different entities. We have a variety of projects that we are carrying on with the government of the Republic of South Sudan. Some of them are led by the government. Some of them are also under UNOPS, direct from the donor. And we remain very grateful for that. So that said, I want to cite one example of the projects that we are carrying. One is the social protection projects. UNOPS has been having these projects right from 2017 in phases. We had 2017, we had 2020, we had 2020, 2022 and also 2023 up to now. These are phases or projects that are meant to alleviate suffering, are meant to align some of these initiatives to the people so that they are get empowered. And if you find our social protection projects, 70% of the target beneficiary is women, 30% is men. And among the 70%, you'll find they are the youths who are energetic. And we have it in our two components, that we have direct income support to the most fragile communities who have very vulnerable population. We also have that to the labor-intensive public work, which is a component of the project, engaging the youth to come out and work so that they get something to be paid to empower them lead a life, very decent life, that they would like to have. If you go around Juba, around the states, you'll find we have the Sabaga Maisha Project, which is one of the projects I'm talking about, mm-hmm. where youth are working. They make their own decisions. They sit and say, this is the kind of project we want to do. Whether it's a road cleaning, whether it is a garbage, whether it is constructing a school, they identify the needs so that they can alleviate the status of the community. I want to take an example of another project we had in Northern Baragazal State. That is the EU Trust Fund. Thank you so much for the EU for funding that project. We had youths who were in Northern Baragazal, particularly around the Nyamlel area. They were not doing anything, but when we started the project, they were employed regardless of the skills they have. And during this project, it also elevated them that they got, one, employed, two, they got skills. Some of them are totally people who came when they know nothing, but through the project, it gave them a sense of living, it gave them a sense of direction, it also elevated their suffering from extreme vulnerability to a better person to make a choice. So UNOPS deals directly through these initiatives. It has its projects through these initiatives and works along with the United Nations cooperative framework, which has a very responsive agenda for women and empowering youths. Mm-hmm. So that is what I can tell you so briefly. Thank you so much.
Yes, we shouldn't forget that targeting women by UN Women, and here most majority of youths. Also, I see that the frame is completing one another. This is great. Also, for the Arabic listeners, Aida min UNOPS, who are Maktab al-Mashru'at fi al-Umm al-Tahida, he would go into al-Maktab da birakiz al-Mashru'at. Al-Mashru'at di bitistahdaf al-Majtama'a, wa Mashru'at bi nafizuha bil-ishtirak ma'a al-Hukuma fi ba'ad al-Ahyan. We would go into akhtar al-Nas al-Mustafidin min al-Mashru'at di al-Shabab, khasal al-Nas al-Bikurandum tenmiyad li-Maharatum. وكمان بيحاول انه يشجعوا الشباب عشان يكون عندهم قرارات ويكون عندهم سلطه حتى في مصير حياتهم وهم عايزين يعملوا شنو بحياتهم يكونوا عندهم الكلام ده والمشروعات دي دائما بتكون على مدى 3 سنين كله يعني في 2017 وثاني 2020 وثاني 2023 وأدد مثال انه اكثر المستفيدين من المشاريع اللي بتقوم بها مكتب المشروعات في الامم المتحده هم الشباب يعني ضربت مثال انه الشباب بيستفيدوا من المداخيل حتى لو ما كان عندهم مهارات بيلقوا شغل وبيلقوا بيكتسبوا سكيلز او مهارات من خلال الشغل ده. نمشي للدكتور معنا في الاستوديو دكتور يوروغو روبرتس. You can speak to us about how does the UN promote gender equality and prevent gender based violence?
Thank you, Gabriel, for that question on how the UN, the entire UN, promote gender equality and prevent GBV. The United Nations commitment to promoting gender equality and preventing gender-based violence in South Sudan is actually the foundation of our UN mandate, the entire UN in the country. Our strength as the UN lies in our coordinated efforts through the UN country team in the country, where each agency holds a critical piece of that puzzle. This ranges from UN Women's high-level advocacy for gender equality, as well as to the World Food Programme's vital work on food security, which directly tackles the drivers of gender-based violence, including UNICEF's dedicated focus on child protection as well as in the prevention of child marriage. So from these statements, it is clear that there's no single UN agency that can work alone. We must work as a team, and this is what we have been doing in the country. At the political and institutional level, our work is basically foundational. So through partners like the UN Women, we actively advocate for and monitor the implementation of the 30% quota, women quota. You know, this is a foundation also of the revitalized peace agreement. On that, we also support the state's capacity to protect its citizens. UN agencies like UNDP provide valuable support to the rule of law, as well as training policies and judicial mandate to monitor and investigate cases in the country. Including UNMISS also has a robust mandate to monitor as well as investigate and publicly report on conflict-related sexual violence. So from here, you can see that the UN is working as a unit. So as UNFPA, my agency, is at the heart of coordinating the gender-based violence response. We are basically mandated to lead the national gender-based violence area of responsibility, coordinating all partners to ensure GBV response is effective and also reaches those most in need. In our programs at the moment, we also support women and girls-friendly spaces, which are vital safe havens where women and girls can find peer support and psychosocial services. We also support one-stop centers across all the 10 states in the country, which provide GBV survivors with integrated medical, legal, as well as psychosocial support under one roof. So basically, our work extends to prevention, where we run community dialogue through the community action groups in the different states in the country, where we work with these men and women and the boy and as well as the boys as allies to ensure that we challenge some of these harmful social norms that perpetuate gender-based violence in this country. So we work as a team, and from what I've just told you, the UN is really mandated to promote equality of women as well as prevent gender-based violence.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. Your office as UNFPA بالنسبة للنسل كمان العايزين يفهموا بالعربي المكتب ده اسمه مكتب السكان يعني بيهتم بقضايا المتعلقة بالسكان والمواطنين العاديين وبيركز برضه بالتعاون مع المكتبين التانين ديل مكتب يونوبس ومكتب يون ويمن انه بيركزوا كمان على المساواة في النوع وهم كمان بيركزوا على الحماية وبيركزوا على الحماية وال وإنه يعمل حاجة قبل ما الحياة تحصل يعني وإنه كمان بيدعموا الدولة في كثير من الحياة بخاصة البوليس والقضاء عشان يعملوا التحقيق في الحياة المتعلقة بالعنف ضد المرأة أو العنف ضد الطفل وكمان بيدعموا المحلات الخاصة لحماية الناس اللي بيتعرضوا للعنف الجنسي والعنف الجسدي بمختلف وعندهم مراكز خاصة بالموضوع ده وكمان بيركزوا على الحوارات في المجتمعات بطريقة مختلفة بيساهموا على المنظمات التانية دي عشان يحققوا الحوارات دي My next question is to you also Dr. Jurugu is about the success stories that you can cite for the youth-led peace buildings and entrepreneurship in this case.
Yeah, thank you, Gabriel, once again for that question on success stories, particularly on youth peace building and entrepreneurship. What we have observed is that we are seeing tangible proof that young people are the powerful drivers of peace and entrepreneurship in South Sudan. A clear example that I can mention is the first ever youth peace and security strategy. A national strategy on youth peace and security. South Sudan is already among the first five countries in Africa to have a national strategy on youth peace and security. And during the drafting of this, we have seen over 800 youth from the different counties and different states and administrative areas came together to chart what they really want to see in this strategy. So this strategy was costed, in other words, costed for the coming 3 to 5 years, and it was led by the youth themselves, and this was endorsed by the Cabinet of South Sudan in 2024 and launched this year. So we are now seeing state-level government are now earmarking funds to see that this national strategy on youth peace and security is implemented. As you will see, that youth constitute over 70% of the population in this country, and now they are leading the processes of peace building in the country. Some examples on the implementation of this youth peace and security strategy is already the youth fora that have been formed in the different states. A clear example we have noted, for example, in Malakal, that the youth-led dialogues with police has reduced the weekend fights by nearly 40% in the stadiums, which I think is remarkable as a result of the peace-building fund that was implemented by UNFPA and UNESCO, funded by the UN Peace-Building Fund. And while we are seeing local authorities are adopting the youth design security plan, including night patrols, and as well as this SMS tip lines, which has significantly reduced market assaults that were previously common. That means youth now are engaging in building peace in the country. So across the country, there are over 36 seed grants have been issued to youth and women-led groups who are now successfully mediating local disputes over issues like cattle routes as well as land use. This is the entire UN working with the youth to see that there is peace. But again, peace requires opportunities. Recently, the UN through UNFPA has come up together with the Ministry of Peace Building to form KUBRI. KUBRI is the Youth Voluntary Empowerment Program that links youth who have just graduated from universities to internships in government institutions. And this is the first of its kind. And these youth are already learning and they are contributing to the development of this country. In other words, they are learning so that they prepare themselves for employment. Recently, we have seen the South Sudan basketball team, you see, in the country. Everyone was celebrating. Different communities were coming together. They were celebrated the wins as well as come together for the losses. And you see that these are some of the successes that are already being led by the youth themselves. They're coming together instead of communal fightings. They're coming to celebrate successes as well as cry for the losses that they have seen as a country. So these are some of the examples that I can cite at the moment that the youth in the country are leading with the support of the UN, entire UN, as well as the government support when it comes to peace building and entrepreneurship.
Great, great, Dr. Robert Jirugu, for this wonderful account there. And also, let me remind the listeners that this is a nationwide discussion hour on Radio Miraya, and today we are taking a stock of what three UN agencies are doing in South Sudan, that is UN Women and UNFPA and UNOPS. And this is as we mark the 80th anniversary of the United Nations, which was founded after the World War II. And today is the day before we mark 80 years. Now, we will take a break and we will continue after this interlude.
Nationwide, we bring you latest current issues, discussions, and information. Nationwide on Radio Miraya.
Yes, we are back, and let me start with UNOPS, with Zaida. And let's speak about how the United Nations engages communities in decision-making.
Thank you so much, Gabriel, once again. I would like to start by saying that today's topic actually rhymes with the United Nations Sustainable Development Cooperation Framework, particularly 2023 to 2025, which really talks about the empowerment and the decision-making as well to achieve Sustainable Development Goals, which is 2020-30. When somebody has to make a decision, that person has to be informed. That's why we say that information is power. And for information to be made, that means the person has to be educated, has to be guided to be able to do that. So back to the question, how does the UN try to engage communities in making decision making? One is before the UN, whatever agents goes to a community, you must partner with the community. You must partner with the local population. You must understand what is going in this local population. You must also let the local population know why you are there so that they're able to make very informed decision based on the agenda of that UN agency in that direct location. You must also directly communicate and listen to the community views. Because by the time you are going to the community as an agent, per your mandate that you have, the community also has their views. The community also have their challenges. So be able to listen and be able to understand their views. Thirdly, you also need to consult, because you may end up going there to duplicate what another agency has been doing in that very location. So for you to make the community make a very empowered decision, they should be able to consult each other. You should be able to consult with the community authorities so that they are able to make a very informed decision at their community perspective. I want to take you back to the project I've just spoken about, the social protection projects that UNOPS has been implementing since 2017. We have one component of this project, which is the labor-intensive public works, which is mostly carried by the youths. These are projects that are not dedicated by the agency, this is what I want you to do. The community sits down, the community identifies what they would like to do, and they make a very informed decision saying this is what we can do, and when we do this, it will be able to impact our lives. It will be able to improve our livelihoods. So that's why you find in the 20 counties across South Sudan, where currently this project is running, you have different kind of projects, sub-projects that are going. Some people are doing tree planting because maybe the area is very dry. Some people are doing farming, which because they want to do. Some of them are cleaning roads, which are being maybe affected by the weather. Some of them are building dikes. By the end of the day, they are getting a small pay, which is part of the policy and the program of the project. So decision-making in the UN goes in these stages. You have to partner with the authorities. You have to understand the context you're working in. And you should be able to listen to the community and consult so that you don't duplicate the affairs that you need to do. And earlier you had mentioned about the UN 80. Mm-hmm. UN at 80. I'm happy that 2025, we're actually working along that line. We celebrated 80 years in service. What does that mean to the UN? Means it's a call for us as a UN entity, a UN family, to identify our operational efficiency. How are we creating difference in the communities we are working? We need to streamline our management and the structural issues so that they benefit the communities and are able to make informed decisions from this efficiency and the work that we are doing. We have to align our work, not overlap. By doing that, we need to consult other UN agencies. We need to consult with the communities. We need to understand what do they need that can alleviate the vulnerability they are going to. And at the end of the day, all these are to meet the global needs and reduce kind of overlapping and also being accountable to them. Yeah. So the decision they make is for them, for the accountability. The decision you make with them to implement your project is also to empower them and also make a very informed decision that really changes their lives at the end of the day. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Aida. And I'm back to Sarah from UN Women. I caught you short before you finished what you were saying. But also, in addition to completing what you were saying, also there's a question of the vision for the next generation of leaders. And how can the UN support it? And this is not exclusively for UN women. So that the listener, that this is a general question. Yes, welcome.
Thank you so much, Gabriel, and even to the viewers. And just to go back to what I was saying earlier, Like I can say that UN Women has also a coordination mandate where we coordinate with other UN agencies as well. And you can see even we have overlapping, we have something that we are all working on together. And so UN Women also contributes to what other UN agencies are doing in the country or in the ground. And we've been able to do so much to support women and girls in South Sudan. For example, even through our women political participation thematic area, we've been able to support the government of South Sudan where through the constitutional making process, election, judicial, security sector reforms, all these things we've been doing. For example, even the implementation of the Women's Charter, development of Women Common Agenda, revitalization of the Women's Union, all these are to improve the status of women in South Sudan and even and girls in South Sudan. So even we've been working with the Women Parliamentarian Caucus. So all these are efforts to improve the livelihood of women and girls in South Sudan. And also, like, for example, the normative frameworks that we have, like the CEDAW, the Beijing Platform for Action, all these have significantly advanced the rights and well-being of women and youth worldwide and even in South Sudan. So all these things are efforts to improve the status of women in South Sudan. You've also asked me, Gabriel, on the question of what is the vision for the next generation. And I'm going to answer this in two parts. The vision for the next generation is gender equality, Gabriel. The empowerment of all women and girls, and the full enjoyment of their human rights. This is the vision for the next generation. And this means that we develop a collective understanding of the potential intergenerational dynamics that we have currently, harnessing that knowledge, experiences, and footprints that will grow the current and the next generation of leaders, especially young women and young men and girls in this country. And this, we are doing it collectively with our other UN agencies. And this is to empower and women and girls, especially in political spheres, economic, digital, and social spaces. We also need to equip them with the digital literacy, leadership skills, access to education and technology. And you can attest to this that we are behind on all of these things. So we need to step up as one UN and ensure that there's all these are protected from all women and girls are protected from all forms of violence, including digital violence. Like the theme for 16 days this year is digital violence. How do we protect women and girls from all this? And then we have to ensure that there's inclusion in decision making processes at all levels. You know, the other part is how can the UN support this vision that I've said of gender equality? One of the first steps is to learn from the past interventions, partnerships, and the changing global context. What do we need to do better and differently? Because now times are changing, context is changing. These days there is artificial intelligence, so there are a lot of things that we need to adapt to so that we can be able to empower the next generation, the next vision. How do we support it efficiently? So we need to see what can we do differently, yeah. Gabriel, to sustain the progress towards the SDG Agenda 2030 with only 5 years remaining for us to go to 2030, have we achieved gender equality? And we are still in this process. So we need to see what do we need to change to ensure the impact of our work on women, girls, and communities improves.
Yep.
And I would say, as UN, we need to invest in education and digital skills for girls and young women. We also need to support youth-led and women-led organizations through funding. These are the things that we can do to support the empowerment or the vision for the next generation. We can also strengthen legal frameworks. And these frameworks are to protect women and girls from violence. We need to promote generational dialogue to bridge the gaps and foster mentorship. So these are the things that we can do as one UN community to ensure that there's sustainability and that women and girls are put at the center of every decision that we are making. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sarah. And let me just say this remark, this is a personal remark, that you are all here, you are South Sudanese, and I'm sure if I can put you anywhere, you will really excel. I'm really happy for your presentation and this passion in which you are presenting yourself, the things you are doing. So this is a great achievement also for the UN to give you this opportunity.
Exactly.
This to excel. Now I can say that you can apply anywhere in the world and you can and you can prove yourself to be working efficiently and effectively. And for the remaining minutes, I would like to see if there are listeners who would like to engage with few questions or remarks on this panel here. The numbers are 091206-7879 and 091206-7929. And already I have two callers on my lines here. Hello?
Yes, good evening, Gabriel Joseph Shadar, and greeting to the guys in the studio. This is Jaden from Upper Nile, Malakal.
Welcome, Jaden.
Okay, I have three questions. My first question is going to UN Women. They are saying that they are supporting women politically, but we have 79 counties in the country, and we only have one woman commissioner, which means it's 1.3%. Uh-huh. So also we have 10 state and 3 administrative areas. All of them are men, no women there. Where is this political support? Mm. My second question is going to UNFPA. Mm. Now there is misconception when it comes to family planning, where there is people who are saying this family planning is only coming here to stop our women from giving birth. It's like a genocide or wiping out the black race, especially in South Sudan. What do you have to say about that? Mm. My last question is going to UNOP. We have many projects that are incomplete. Sometimes when the project stops being funded, that's the end of it. Does it mean that the UNOP is not advising some other UN agencies who are implementing this project in terms of exit strategy and sustainability? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And I can say all the questions for Jaden will take our time. Let me start with the first question to UN Women, and then I would come to UNFP, and then I will conclude with UNOPS. Yes.
So I just want to say thank you so much for that question, and it's a relevant question, and we acknowledge your question. And like I said, we are working towards gender equality. And with 5 years going to 2030, and we haven't still achieved this. And currently, we are working with the Women Parliamentarian Caucus to ensure that women are represented in decision-making tables, that 35% affirmative action is put across in every state. We've been to Malakal. We are trying to work with. We've formed the Women Union, revitalized the Women Union in Malakal. We've also formed the Women in Uniform Security Sector Reforms. So in all this, we are working to be able to put women at the decision making.
And of course, let us say that you are advocating.
Yes, we are.
You are not forcing anybody to do this. Yeah.
Yes.
Like what he's saying is like you are the one who will be putting women.
Yes, like UN Women comes and say we are appointing this. Yes.
You
yes.
can do that. Yeah. Of course, there are other who will take the message from
you.
Let me go quickly to UNFPA.
Yeah. Thank you. His name again? I have forgotten.
Jaden.
Jaden. Yes. Thank you. This is a very important question, and such misconceptions are all over the country. But I would like to let you know that the main purpose of family planning is for you to space when you want to have children, not to stop you from having children. Mm-hmm. The spacing allows you to be able to plan for your family such that when one starts school, that's when you're able to bring in another one so that you're able to support their school fees, their health care and all that. So it is also right-based. We give you the information, the importance of family planning, and then we allow you to choose. We do not
impose
forcefully. Yeah. We do not force anyone to take in the family planning. So this is wrong, and the government of South Sudan has actually adopted this, that we should close the unmet needs of family planning by 2030. In other words, the government itself is aware that family planning is important. And that's what we are supporting in the country. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. We close with UNOPS.
Thank you so much, Jaden from Malakal. I would like to stress one point that UNOPS, as the United Nations Office for Project Service, is a project-based organization that is not financed by the member states. It is an agency that is an operational arm of the UN, and it doesn't have the mandate as well to advise other UN agencies about the projects that they are doing. So they are purely demand-driven UN agency. We work directly with different entities, could be the donors, could be the government, and whenever we are entering into any project in any location, we have a clear communication guidelines. What we are coming to do, how long we are going to do this project, and what is our exit strategy. Mm-hmm. So as UNOBS, I don't think there's anywhere across South Sudan that we have left projects suspended without a clear communication why it is there.
Yeah.
Whenever it is that stage, we communicate what is happening and how the exit strategy will look like.
Yeah, and when you say project itself,
yeah,
that means it's limited by time, limited by place.
So yeah, thank you so much for that.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Really very exciting and very informative. I learned a lot from today's panel from Sarah Nyabak chat from the Communication Officer of UN Women. Thank you very much for being
Thank
on this
you.
Program. Thank you very much, Dr. Jurugu Roberts, Program Specialist, Youth and HIV, UNFPA. Thanks for being here. And thanks, Ida Kamis, from a former colleague.
I'm happy to be back, and I see you are very passionate
with the mic.
I still love the mic. I still miss my listeners.
Communication Officer from UNFPA. And that is the end of today's discussion and also information and conversation with this wonderful panel here. And it's all from me, Gabriel Shadar, and happy United Nations Day.
Happy United Nations Day to you, Gabriel. Thank you so much.
Thanks to our dedicated listeners for being with us on this program. And that is all from Nationwide on Radio Mariah.
Nationwide, your daily current affairs program on Radio Mariah.